to Today on Broadway for Friday, December 16th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
In a world where Broadway meets a podcast, in comes James Marino. You got some nice compliments on the Twitter yesterday, James. Some people really digging the deep, gravelly voice.
As I mentioned, my wife likes it better.
James, whatever happens in your bedroom stays in your bedroom. I don't need to hear this.
All right. So out of the bedroom, Michael Riedel dishing Broadway rumors for the band's visit and Othello.
What a transition from the bedroom to Michael Riedel. Yeah, but James, these are two things that we've talked about and even kind of discussed the possibility of transfers before. But in his article yesterday on the New York Post, Michael Riedel talked about rumors of two off-Broadway shows potentially making transfers soon to Broadway. Now, James, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say,
where
are they going? There are no Broadway houses. And that's part of the story with each of these shows. The first is the Atlantic Theater Company's world premiere production of The Band's Visit, which we actually talked about yesterday. This is something that Riedel has referenced before about potentially having eyes on Broadway. The problem is apparently that even though the show is fairly intimate, it's not small. And so the producers, the money folks behind the show, have been crunching the numbers, and they've looked at some of the smaller theaters like The Booth and Circle in the Square, and they just can't make the bottom line work with those smaller numbers of seats in the audience. So they need to find a bigger house, and as we know, there really aren't a lot of houses open, so they're going to have to wait a little while longer till a bigger house opens. They say they're not in a rush, and interestingly enough, the thing that jumps out at me as being the biggest deterrent from them being able to move in the spring is the availability of their star. Is the availability of their star, Tony Shalhoub, who has another engagement here in the spring. So I'm assuming they're going to want to have him back for whenever they find a Broadway house. This is already a very crowded Broadway season in the spring in terms of new musicals with Dear Evan Hansen, Groundhog Day, and War Paint, which apparently has undergone some rewriting since it played Chicago. So it looks like David Cromer and David Yazbek are going to be waiting after the show closes at the Atlantic on January 8th until probably the fall to bring the show to Broadway. Now, the other show, James, that we have speculated about potentially moving from off-Broadway to Broadway is the other one that Riedel talked about, and that is the Daniel Craig, David Oyelowo New York Theater Workshop production of Othello, which I believe you're seeing either this weekend or next week, right?
I think this weekend, yeah.
Okay, so this is one that is pretty much all sold out. As we said earlier this week, the only tickets that are available are like benefit ones that range from $1,500 to $2,500. It's completely sold out, and the reviews are incredibly good. We've talked about before that Daniel Craig, after his last Broadway outing in Betrayal with his wife Rachel Weisz, really kind of poo-pooed ever coming back to Broadway, mainly, he said, for creative reasons, but it really probably had to do more with the fact that his first two Broadway shows, both Betrayal and A Steady Rain with Hugh Jackman, while they made a ton of money, weren't all that critically well received. However, playing Iago next to David Oyelowo's Othello, apparently people are very excited about his performance, and that has made him a little more interested in coming to Broadway. The producer with the money behind this production of Othello is Barbara Broccoli, who controls the James Bond franchise, which obviously has made Daniel Craig a huge worldwide name. And that probably means that if they want to find a Broadway house, they can find a Broadway house. Now, James, I know we often talk about there's just not a lot of houses out there, but when you have someone who is almost guaranteed box office gold, like Daniel Craig has been in his Broadway career, chances seem to be pretty good that they're going to find something if they want. I mean, something's got to close at some point. And one thing that was really interesting to me is that they did actually mention the Hudson. Now, keep in mind that the Tony cutoff date is April 27th. The Hudson is booked with Sunday in the Park with George through the 23rd. Is there any chance at all that they could throw Othello, which has already been, you know, running off Broadway, into that house and that short of time to have an official opening before the end of Tony, before the Tony cutoff date?
I don't know what kind of time machine you have,
But I'm just saying, it just, I would not have thought so normally, but they mentioned that Circle in the Square looks like it's going to be gobbled up by Once on This Island, which we're going to talk about. But they mentioned the Hudson. It's in the, he said, Rito said, quote, the Hudson Theater's in the mix as well, though it's booked until April 23rd with the revival of Sunday in the Park with George starring Jake Gyllenhaal. The cutoff date is 4 days later. I can't imagine that would happen, but in a crunch, it's a small theater with about 1,000 seats. This is an off-Broadway show that could probably transfer fairly well. They could be rehearsing somewhere else. I think it'd be kind of interesting to see how that works. They wouldn't need a ton of previews.
I can't imagine. Yeah, I can't.
I wouldn't either, but in a crunch... You always talk about there's not enough theater, so someone's got to get creative.
Well, so here's my creative thought here. Maybe one of those plays out there that's planning to come in might not be financially ready.
Could be. I don't know what one that would be. There's, you know, most of the plays are either have huge stars attached or are part of a nonprofit nonprofit season. So I'm not sure what that would be. I mean, I can't imagine, I don't know, something like, you know, Glass Menagerie, you know, having to take a bow. I mean, Jitney and The Present are both part of subscription series, maybe Significant Other. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things that, who knows? I mean, money talks, I guess.
That's right. It does.
And one thing to keep in mind is the actor playing Cassio in this Othello off-Broadway production is Finn Wittrock, who is also set to be the gentleman caller in the previously mentioned Glass Menagerie. So if they do transfer, he's either going to have to bail on Glass Menagerie or they're going to have to recast the role for Othello on Broadway.
We'll have to see what happens after Jan 1. So Once on This Island workshop looks into changing how the show sounds.
Yeah, this is an interesting story. This is one of those scores that I think people love. I think it's got some incredible songs by Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty. But apparently in this new adaptation or this new revival being directed by Tony nominee Michael Arden and being shepherded by the always interesting and boundary pushing producer Ken Davenport, what they're doing is they're looking at this show from a more, I don't know, realistic yet theatrical way. At the heart of the story is a disaster. And as Michael Arden said, we are taking a look at disaster like we've seen in Haiti and how that can be a metaphor for how we all rebuild. So what they're doing is in the sense of it being a disaster, they're saying, what would people be using to make music? They'd be using garbage or pipes or trash cans or found objects. They want to get out of having a traditional orchestra pit, which is why Michael Riedel suggests that perhaps Circle in the Square would be a good home for this. Previously, Ken Davenport's Godspell played there as well. So they could have musicians with different types of items around the theater creating this music. I don't know how I feel about this because I think it's such a beautiful score, James, but we know Michael Arden is not afraid to push the boundaries of shows that we think we know. He's done that with Spring Awakening last season. And I guess it's a good thing to have Lynn and Steven involved in this process to make sure this music works. But this seems interesting to me.
You know what? It's especially exciting for me is because when I see a show, and I'll use this as an example, and not to hold this out as the only thing, but when I saw Cats, the revival recently on Broadway, my big disappointment about it was it was very similar, if not identical, to the Cats of, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And I was really disappointed because you have this opportunity to reconceive and have a different point of view. Why mount exactly the same thing? And so if they're going to take a totally different point of view on Once on This Island, I will be right there in the front row.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I just don't want them to lose what makes the music of this show so special. I mean, there's this great story, Waiting for Life to Begin, and so many great songs. So I'm hoping whatever they figure out, I trust these folks. They are really great artists, and I just hope they don't screw it up in trying to do something different.
All right. What's up in the show and casting news?
Well, we've got some interesting stories. The first is the breaking news that Encore's artistic director Jack Fertel announced the Encore's production of Big River's casting. Obviously, this is a show that was previously announced, but yesterday they gave us all the names that are being part of this special concert production. The first playing the role of Huckleberry Finn will be Nicholas Barish, who made a huge splash in She Loves Me last season. He will be escaping down the river with Jim, played by Kyle Scatliff, who has been in The Color Purple and Les Mis on Broadway. They will be running away from Duke, played by Christopher Sieber, and King, played by Tony Sheldon. The cast will also feature Lauren Worsham, Adriana Hicks, Zachary Infante, and others, along with Cass Morgan, who I think is one of those people we don't see enough on Broadway and off-Broadway stages. Big River will run for 7 performances at New York City Center from February 8th through the 12th. I have a feeling that this is going to be a really, really hot ticket for people to find coming up here in a few months. Also, speaking of shows that made some interesting announcements yesterday, the St. Louis Muni Theater announced the creative teams for its 2017 season. We've talked about their season before. Going to run through not all of the creative teams, but just a little bit. Leading off the season will be a production of Jesus Christ Superstar, directed by Gordon Greenberg, currently represented on Broadway with Irving Berlin's Holiday Inn. Then going to the next show, All Shook Up, will be directed by Dan Konecki, who directed Lysistrata Jones on Broadway, choreographed Xanadu, choreographed the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. Then the one that I really was interested in, the one I really wanted to talk about, why I wanted to bring this up, was they're going to be doing The Unsinkable Molly Brown, James. And we've talked about this before. This was going to be a part of this season. But it appears that this is going to be at least related to the production that was done in Denver a couple years ago that starred Beth Malone, because director Kathleen Marshall will be directing and choreographing this show again like she did in Denver. This is one that has been rumored for a potential Broadway revival for a while now with Beth Malone attached. No casting was announced, but with Kathleen Marshall helming this, I have a feeling that there is a pretty decent shot that the Fun Home Tony nominee will be a part of this production. Then, speaking of shows that don't seem to change and every version is the exact same, Dennis Jones will direct and choreograph A Chorus Line for the Muni as well. And then Chris Bailey will direct and choreograph Newsies to finish the season. We will have a link with the full creative teams, including a lot of the choreographers and the music directors and all of that stuff, in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com. Finally, in the show and casting news, some more incredible names for the Jesus Christ Superstore that would be an interesting adaptation. But for the all-female Jesus Christ. Honestly, what happened was I watched the NBC sitcom Superstore released a couple web episodes for the holidays, since they've been on a little bit of a hiatus over the holidays. They released 2 of them today, and I watched them. So I had Superstore and America Ferrera on my mind. So sue me. Anyway, the Morgan James and Shoshana Bean led concert version of Jesus Christ Superstar that'll star all females added a few more people. Tony Award winner Debbie Gravitt is going to play Caiaphas. Tony Award nominee Orfei is going to play Pontius Pilate. Heaven help me, that's going to be awesome. Tony Award nominee Kiala Settle is going to play Peter. Shayna Steele, who we just saw coming back to the Dynamites and Hairspray Live, is going to play Simon. My friend Ellen Marie Marsh is going to be in it. Anne Harada is going to play King Herod. Anne Harada is going to be King Herod. That is quite possibly the best casting I've ever heard. And Alex Newell, as we've already known this, they announced this before. Alex Newell, who is a – I don't want to put the wrong label because I don't know how Alex identifies, but is going to play Mary Magdalene. You'll know that he played Unique on the show Glee. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing. This show is I think going to be an incredible thing. It's going to be Monday, January 16th at 8 p.m. And we'll have a link to where you can get tickets. It's going to be at the Highline Ballroom over on 16th between 9th and 10th Avenue. And I think Shoshana Bean and Morgan James both have such insane voices. I would listen to them sing anything, but I love Jesus Christ Superstar, and the rest of this cast is awesome. So I could not be more excited to hear how this goes. Unfortunately, I probably gonna get to see it, but hopefully there's some videos that float around or something.
So next up,
There's nothing. Yeah, I didn't give you a title for this one, but in yesterday's episode, James, we put out a few calls for help because we got onto topics that we hadn't planned on and we didn't do the research for. The first one was, I remembered that there was a production of Ma Rainey, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, that happened somewhere with a fairly decent name as a part of the show. And we had two people reach out and remind me of what they were. First, our friend Sam Gonzalez sent me an email, and then Allie Laffer sent me a tweet. And it was at the Mark Taper Forum out in California. It was the Center Theater Group. And starring as Ma Rainey was Lilias White, the great Lilias White. And it was directed by Felicia Rashad. So whether or not this has any connection to what Denzel Washington does at HBO, I heard great reviews about this. That's why it stuck in my mind. I just couldn't remember the details. Allie Laffer, who tweeted me, said she saw it and it was fantastic. So thanks both to her and for Sam for reminding me. And then yesterday we threw out the Shane signal yesterday on the show, James, and our friend Shane Marshall Brown from over in the press office that handles Hamilton. He did confirm that some guy named Lynn had made it official that Taron Killam will be King George III, the fifth, answering our questions about the line of succession and how Groff Sauce fit into that, into his split role when Andrew Reynolds took the throne for a little while. In fact, we'll have a tweet to where Lynn actually says it. He says, "Oh, damn, is at Taron Killam King George III, the fifth?" So I guess, you know, that answers it. Of course, Taron Killam responded, because 7, 8, 9. No, that's not right. Thank you, Lynn. I promise not to break your show. I think we're in good hands there. So thank you both to Sam, to Allie, and to Shane for helping us out with some things that we didn't quite have the answers for yesterday.
Loves the listeners. Loves them.
I just love that someone is actually listening and we're not doing this just for ourselves, because that would be rather pointless and frustrating.
Well, our moms listen, don't we?
No.
No. Oh, thank goodness.
Oh, well.
And you know, that guy over at Center Theater Group, James Sims, he should have checked in with us, but that's a whole other thing.
He might have been busy. He might need to binge at the end of the week.
Yeah, I tell you. All right. So the New York Times looks at Josh Groban's Broadway boot camp.
You all right, James? You seem like you're struggling a little bit there. Your voice okay?
I am struggling to get through this, yeah.
All right. Well, I'll talk for a few minutes and give you a break. In the New York Times on December 14th, the wonderful Michael Paulson did a long, in-depth look for how Josh Groban prepared to make his Broadway debut in Natasha Pierre in The Great Comet of 1812. For those of you that don't really know a ton about Josh Groban, you know that he's probably a huge recording star, gold albums, maybe even platinums. He's a Grammy nominee. He's been around forever, does huge world tours. But what you might not remember is that he had really charming roles on Ally McBeal, the TV series. He was kind of like one of the in-house singers after like Vonda Shepard. And then and this is like when he was in his, you know, late teens. He kind of became a star at 17. Then he's been on Glee. He's been on Parks and Rec. He actually, you know, has a decent amount of acting, even though he's never been on Broadway and hasn't really done a whole lot of theater since graduating from high school, where he famously played Tevye. That YouTube video is everywhere. Anyway, one of the things about this show is that people associate Josh Groban with this beautiful, legit, angelic voice, but Pierre is an unhappy Russian who drinks for most of the show. So director Rachel Chavkin and Groban kind of came up with a way to not only help him toughen up his voice, but toughen up his character. He read books on Meisner while he was on tour preparing for the show. But Rachel Chavkin also told him to read a book called Please Kill Me. It's an oral history of punk music, to kind of get him into the mindset of what she calls a profoundly ruined man. So Groban talks about what he did to get ready to play this part. They also talk about having to learn how to play the accordion. He's a very musical guy, so I have a feeling that wasn't a big deal. But what was a big deal was getting him to work with choreographer Sam Pinkleton to make sure that he was not completely incompetent when it came to dancing. Now, James, I imagine with accordions and this Russian music that there's a decent amount of dancing in Great Comet, but I wouldn't think of this as a traditional musical theater dancing show.
No, It's in its own league.
I'm not going to ask you anymore. I did not realize it was that bad. So anyway, Michael Paulson's article is a great read to kind of really see what it takes to make your Broadway debut, especially if you don't come from a theatrical background, even though I think he's a natural. And I've been shocked that it's taken this long to get Josh Groban on the Broadway stage. But hopefully, based on all the reports, both for how he is conducting himself on stage and off stage, being an unbelievable, wonderful part of the theater community, I hope that this is the first of many, many Broadway performances that we will see Josh Groban in. So anyway, James, I'm going to wrap. Oh, wait, do you want to say something? You want to struggle through and say something?
Yeah, let me just say something not about Josh Groban, but about the New York Times. I know that we have some folks who listen to us from the Times, and it's certainly I don't know if I don't think that Brantley or Isherwood listen to us, but other folks that I know at the Times listen to us. And there's been lots of talks about the theater section getting cut back yet again. And we'd love to hear from somebody at the Times if you want to share any of that information, because, you know, just every day we look to the New York Times to keep us in the know about what's happening on the Broadway stage and in behind closed doors on Broadway. So just this story about Josh Groban is one of the examples of things that we could lose if the Times cuts back their theater coverage yet again.
Yeah, you can say whatever you want about Ben Brantley or Charles Isherwood in terms of their critical style or their critical eye, but there is a reason that the New York Times is the paper of record. There is a reason that this is the one that everybody looks to in terms of theatrical coverage, both in terms of features like this Groban piece or reviews. So hopefully whatever they do to try to make the New York Times a successful piece, despite people on Twitter consistently saying it's a bad and failing paper and that it's sad, exclamation point. I hope that they remember that this is a bastion of theatrical coverage and that the New York theater community and New York in general would be lesser without their continued support.
The heart of Broadway is Times Square. All right, why don't you get us out of here?
Gladly. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt and subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. He is James Marino from Broadway Radio and Broadway Stars. Thanks so much for spending part of your Friday with us, and we will talk to you on Sunday for This Week on Broadway, and then I think maybe on Monday. We haven't really decided what we'll do leading up to the holidays, but tweet us or email us and let us know what you want to hear over the holidays if there's not a ton of news. And one way or the other, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Yeah. I didn't.